This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry. Thanks for listening. Well, in this hour, we look at a harsh and, until recently, secret report out of Pakistan that sheds new light on the killing of Osama bin Laden and the 9 years he was able to live in Pakistan undetected. We talk to one Republican congressman about whether his party feels any pressure as the House takes up immigration reform. And you had a lot of words in reaction to our discussion yesterday about swearing. One theater expert says if you want to know the true value of foul language, just turn to Shakespeare. That's all this hour. But first, Egypt. As American officials continue to hedge over whether what's taken place in Cairo is truly a coup, with some $1.5 billion in aid on the line, two of the richest Arab nations have already outspent the United States, pledging $8 billion to Egypt. Saudi Arabia and Qatar offered the large financial aid package in a move to stabilize the uncertain interim government there in Egypt, and it sends a strong signal of influence in the region. Meanwhile, the U.S. stands by, still issuing no declarative stance on its aid to Egypt.
Our aid to Egypt is an opportunity to mold the future. And in my mind, that future has to be an Egypt for all, one in which all the different elements of Egyptian society participate in their government.
That is Senator Bob Menendez, Democrat from New Jersey and chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, who, unlike the White House, says we should be using U.S. foreign aid to influence the process in Egypt. We're going to hear more from Menendez tomorrow on the program. But that issue there of inclusion, well, that seems to be also in question today, as Egypt's state prosecutor issued warrants for Muslim Brotherhood leader Mohammed Badi and a number of other senior officials. It's a move that stands in stark contrast to Ashraf Ekoli, Egyptian ambassador to the United States, who described the process of forming an assembly to create a new constitution in Egypt on Sky News. Listen.
It started by a small committee. They will revise the frozen constitution. Later on, it will be a bigger committee of 50 members. It will include all representatives from the Egyptian society, even youth, women.
Throughout all of this, the U.S.'s hands appear to have been tied, not wanting to call a coup, not wanting to come out for or against the Muslim Brotherhood. Earlier today, I spoke with P.J. Crowley, former State Department spokesman and current professor at George Washington University, about the U.S. government's next moves as it anxiously watches Egypt over these next few days and weeks.
The United States will continue to support Egypt. It's a vitally important country. How Egypt goes will say a lot about how the Middle East goes going forward. And as you mentioned, other regional powers are already stepping up with aid. So the United States is in this kind of conundrum in order to continue, if not expand, not just military support, but civilian support to Egypt. It has to find another word to describe what's happening besides coup. The interim government is a step forward, but it also reveals the deep political divide that still exists across the Egyptian political spectrum, but also within the opposition. You had the kind of false start earlier this week where El-Baradei was rumored to be the incoming interim prime minister, only to have one of the opposition factions, the Nur party, object. Right. Now El-Baradei's the vice president. This will be reassuring to the international community, but the dilemma is El-Baradei, as one example, has very little political constituency within Egypt.
Does the speed with which the Egyptian authorities, the interim government, moved to this plan that we just heard about, the interim council, constitutional redraft and elections, really, really fast? Take us behind the scenes if you can a little bit, because you have so much experience in the diplomatic world. If the United States' hands are tied publicly, isn't it likely that we were moving behind the scenes to get this announcement as fast as possible?
Well, I don't think the United States' hands are tied per se, but just to recognize what happens in Egypt will be based on decisions made by Egyptians, good decisions as well as bad decisions. You know, certainly the United States' message to Egypt, both publicly and privately, is okay. You want a democratic reset, get back to a civilian, democratically elected government as soon as possible and make it inclusive, which is the primary dilemma, you know, for the military and the interim government, finding a way to re-engage the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a significant element within, you know, the Egyptian political realm, convincing them to let go of President Morsi, re-engage, re-compete, and become part of a more inclusive government than the one that Morsi was leading over the past year.
I wonder what problems it presents for our interests in Egypt, as we hear now and we've heard on the show, that both sides in the protests and in the fights, each of them blames the other for of being clients and puppets of the United States. The Muslim Brotherhood blames the protesters and the secularists of that. The secularists turn right around and say that Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood were actually in bed with the United States. And in all of these arguments, the boogeyman is the United States.
Sure. And we have the only unifying factor in all of what you just said is the fact that everyone's angry at the United States for something. I think that comes with the territory. Ultimately, if Egypt turns out right, the United States will have a positive and constructive relationship with a new Egypt.
PJ Crowley, former State Department spokesman, currently professor at George Washington University. Thanks, PJ.
Thanks, Todd.